everyone. Welcome to the Film for Fans podcast, the podcast from movie fans for movie fans. I am your host, Ryan Dunleavy. Co-host, Rob Dunham.
We are live and in person.
We are back with a vengeance.
One could even say it's epic.
It might be an epic combination.
Yes.
Yes, an epic podcast, an epic combination. We may or may not be talking about an epic movie.
Yes.
About coming out.
Movie made about.
Yes.
There's so much epic variants.
There is. And we have used that word far too much already in this podcast. Yes, we will in fact be discussing The Odyssey. Both of us had a chance to see it on opening day. So we're going to give you our look at The Odyssey. I know some people will be checking it out this weekend, some of you later. So we will, like we normally do with our reviews, we'll give you our thoughts on the movie in general before we get into the specifics. So if you want our take without the spoilers, there will be a little section of that. And then, of course, we'll give you the spoilers that you can listen to if you've already seen it, or definitely come back to once you've seen the movie. And, of course, we'll do a little bit of box office, a little bit of watch list, all those type of fun things. But now, let's get it started, and let's kick off with the box office. We have a few interesting things. Last week's box office, number one, Moana. The live-action version of Moana came out last weekend. It finished number one at the box office.
Good.
But that's the only good news for Moana. Oh. $43.1 million for Moana.
What can I say? It's a boost.
Is right. Number two, another kids movie out, Minions and Monsters. $21.1 million in week two. That is a 42.8% drop from week one to week two. So not bad. That combined with number three movie, also like this range of movies did not help Moana on this. 2 week total for Minions and Monsters, $108.9 million. So, okay. That's borderline acceptable. That's okay, acceptable for that. Number three, Toy Story 5 in its fourth week did $19 million. The 4 week total for Toy Story 5, $404 million. So that one hit the epic monster that everyone was expecting some of these other movies to do and didn't. Toy Story 5 did. So you're running into three very popular kids movie franchises all kind of out at the same time, which, yeah, I understand why they're releasing one in summer because kids are home for summer. Mm-hmm. But that might be part of the reason, only part of the reason Moana tanked. But we can talk about that. Number four, Evil Dead Burn, $13.7 million in week one. And number five, in its second week in the box office, Young Washington did $6.9 million, 64% drop from week one to week two, 2 week total of 33.5. So slightly more than average on the drop there. Young Washington was one of those movies that did lots and lots and lots of pre-work on trying to sell upfront tickets on that one. So it's
discount the tickets.
Yeah. So not a huge shock that it had a slightly over normal drop off, but it wasn't dramatic. It wasn't terrible either from that standpoint.
So it's also a while. One movie that's not on the top five that people rated or hoping still be the top five by then. Supergirl.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a rough one.
And if only one could have predicted that.
Yeah.
If only there was the thought that that was going to happen.
Rude.
Yeah. Wonder why.
It's at the point now where it almost seems that DC does not have a hope of coming back.
I think the superhero genre is in real problems right now, with the exception of the one movie coming out later this month, which I think will not have that problem. But the superhero genre, DC's general ridiculousness, and the constant parade of lead actresses sabotaging their own films prior to them coming out is not great.
Yeah.
But I mean, just to spend a second on this one, I knew this movie would tank the moment I saw her character in Superman. Because the affect and the way they set up that character was like, oh, this is not going to go
well. Well, it was like a minute of, I don't like that character.
Yeah.
And then what you didn't like about the character was the entire movie.
Yes.
Did you see Supergirl?
I did not see Supergirl yet.
I did see Supergirl.
But it was obvious that they had made that her persona.
It's like an hour and 45 minutes of, I don't like you or anyone.
Yeah.
It's just like,
it was like the whole thing. Like, she had like 2 minutes on screen was off-putting. And then they took, like, they were like, no, that's her character. And they're like, why?
Yeah.
Like, who's asking for that? And then with her running her mouth about people not liking her character, did not engender anybody else to decide to give it a chance.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And we'll revisit that theme in a little bit.
Yeah.
Thoughts on Moana?
I actually also saw it. And I guess my daughter wanted to see it. My daughter was 6 when the original came out.
Yeah.
One of my core movie memories is hearing my daughter sing along the soundtrack in my car. Over and over and over again. 5-year-old. Wow. So to go to the movie to hear her singing along for this, the live action one, I thought it was way better than I've seen a lot of other people say. But also not surprised that they're thanks the way it has.
Yeah.
Because it's just, I would say that it's not necessary.
Yeah.
I just say that about most, if not all, of the Disney live action movies.
And I think people have, I think that's the main problem here, is this one didn't have any controversies surrounding it. It was just that everyone looks at this like, yeah, you just want my mug. Like, yeah, this is not a new idea. You've done this a million times before.
I mean, who doesn't want to see The Rock with Bear? Apparently, everyone doesn't want to see The Rock with Bear.
There it is. We've solved the mystery.
Yeah.
Rock with hair, little good. Rock bald, that's where your money went. That's where your $100 million went.
Short hair, like be cool.
Ooh, yeah.
Okay. You go with that.
Can have a talk about that. Yeah. Then. There we go. So there it is. We've solved the mystery. It was The Rock with hair.
Yeah.
He did.
The Rock with hair.
Yes. You should know better.
Shaggy Rock is not the way to go.
No. Definitely not. All right. I have no real other thoughts on anything else in the box office.
I will say, I'm pretty sure there's going to be a Justin movie in the summer section.
There will be. Which leads us into what would normally be our segment of what comes out this week and also happens to be our discussion. So we're rolling it all into one. The Odyssey comes out this weekend. It's out right now as we are recording. And it is Christopher Nolan's latest film after the first one since winning the Oscar for Best Director, Oppenheimer for Best Picture, multiple awards, the famous Barbie Oppenheimer thing that led both movies to ridiculous amounts. But Christopher Nolan is back with The Odyssey, based on the Homer epic. And starring a laundry list of excellent actors, led by Matt Damon. And it was the first film filmed entirely in IMAX. And as did the last film, got the chance to see it in 70mm IMAX. We are fortunate enough to have one of the very, very few, one of the 11 in the entire country.
Yeah.
IMAX 70mm film theaters.
I think there are 26 in the
world. Yeah, 26 in the world, 11 in the United States, and one of them's an hour away from us. So, yeah, I did that.
And somehow I find a way to still laugh.
I had, yeah, in fairness,
I didn't go to Oppenheimer,
so. I had to sit in the second row.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it was well worth it to be there for the first showing of Oppenheimer. But we are going to discuss the film. We're going to discuss our thoughts on it. We might even get into a couple of the controversies surrounding the film. and we'll give you our take on it. But let's start with our general take. This is the non-spoiler part. If you don't want to hear any of this, you can skip down. You can look in the notes and skip down to the final section. But we're going to give you our thoughts on the movie in general without getting into spoilers. Then we'll give you a spoiler alert, and then we'll talk about the good stuff. All right, Rob, give me your broad picture. What did you think of The Odyssey?
My first impression of the movie is, unsurprisingly, for Christopher Nolan, it's definitely brilliant. I don't know where it will end up sitting on the list of Rotten Tomatoes, but right now it's number one, but how long that goes before we settle on final ranking. Although I have qualms with that ranking, because somehow it's suppressing 7% which is But for right now, The Odyssey is at 97% reviews. We could talk more about this as we go on. I will say it was technically brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure how I feel about the art of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mainly it's really and sound design and soundtrack and a whole bunch of things. Like, the movie were top tier, and they're probably got a lot of way with a fair amount of like technical awards.
Yeah.
Survival, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The question is how much of that translates into the major awards. I think I can identify one video I think will win a major award, but we can talk about that a little bit as we go too. It was what I wanted it to be. At the same time, like, it almost felt too fast, which is a crazy thing to say because it really seems long.
Yes. Very nearly 3 hours on time.
It's so dense and complex that, like, honestly, I walk away from that and I'm like, I feel like there should be more.
Yeah, I feel like the first part of the film, they kind of rushed through the first part of the film a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did get a sense of that as I was going.
But I also heard that part of the necessity of cutting it down was because of the life period the movie could.
Yeah.
Since it was on an IMAX film, he couldn't
film it for sure. Yeah. It's 2 million frames. It's 2 million. Like, it is a massive, massive film. Like, the physical film for this is unbelievably massive. So there is, like, there's a physical limit to how big the film can actually be if you want to do it in this way. Yeah. I think, for me, did I enjoy it? Absolutely. I thought it was epic. I thought it was adventurous. I thought it was a wild ride that I thoroughly enjoyed watching. One of the things for me is when I look at Christopher Nolan, one of the things that always strikes me is there are several things that Nolan does absolutely better than anybody else out there right now. And adapting The Odyssey does not put him full in that place. If he writes an original story and creates an original film, I think that is where Nolan is in a category that nobody else can tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Adapting a historical epic, did he do an amazing job on? Yes, I think he did. Is he the only director who could have done an amazing job adapting The Odyssey? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he did a great job of it. And he did it in a way that was very Christopher Nolan. It was a very grounded film. For all the kind of, for lack of a better term, fantasy elements in the story of The Odyssey, he intentionally did it in a way that was much more grounded and left, didn't stray as much into the fantasy element as other directors might have leaned in more into that direction. So that was interesting. So
we've seen oh, we have quite real body of the restroom.
Yeah.
And I think he excels at non-linear filmmaking, seeing her being a major part of the stories.
Yeah.
I think he excels, like you said, at original storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that, like, out of the last few movies he's done, we've had Dunkirk, Oppenheimer, and now Odyssey, which are all based on either like that historical that person with water literature.
Yeah.
So not like they were doing a lot. I think Oppenheimer's next is the exception of those two is I think it's better than the Odyssey, if what if I had the right
name.
But like we've seen with each of them, there is something that is not fully realized in those movies when it comes to this style or his state of
mind.
But I don't think that we shouldn't make the style movie because I still think it's great. We haven't really talked yet about our rankings for the year, well, absolutely for the year.
Yeah.
And for me personally, I would have this like just slightly behind Project Hail Mary. For me, it's my one in one aims here. And I think a big reason for that is that I felt with Project Hail Mary, like nothing was left on the table that only sounds like. And if you walk away from it feeling one. I watched the movie like 5 times now. And every time that I'm watching it, I'm beating. Like I can't not be happy about what I just watched.
Yeah.
And the Odyssey is not that kind of movie. It's not made to make you feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
But the detriment to that is in some ways it felt kind of too weeks on for me at times, which is gonna lead to like people who really want to see it go on to see it. The question is like how much like is the same if I want how. Because it's not that kind of movie people are going to go out and be like, you need to go see it. I don't think so. Was,
no.
Unless they know someone who's like a major, either like historic mythology or like technical aspects of film.
Mm-hmm.
Bam. Like this doesn't seem to be the casual audience kind of movie in the way some of it audience.
I think you're still going to get very high numbers because Nolan is that type of director now. That everyone wants to see his take on things. So even if it's, and I think this is where Nolan has built himself up to where he can do this. Like, I think he, in some ways, is a victim of his own success. Like, he's so good. And the movies he's made are so amazing that when, like, this film coming out from any other director and be like, this was amazing. This was so good. Coming from Christopher Nolan, you're kind of like, maybe he's got more. and I don't say that in a bad way, because I think in and of itself, absent this, I think he did a great job of it. And the question remains is kind of like, if there are qualms in it, how much of the qualms are built into the story itself and how much of them are his take on it?
Okay.
Yeah.
I said mine, and I looks like you had a reaction. But if you had to rank
the
top three movies of the year so far, we've seen.
Yeah.
Dude, you know what they are.
My initial impression would be that I would still have Project Hail Mary in the number one spot. Now, I will caveat that in that it will take a second watching of the Odyssey for me, from the technical standpoint of having sat in the second row of a 70 millimeter IMAX screen for an action film is not the 100% the most ideal viewing spot. So I would like to
hear like one of the guys being picked up by silver in that one scene
at times. But one of the things from a technical standpoint, one of the things when you're watching it up close from like the second row of a 70 millimeter IMAX screen, because the screen is just so much bigger, is the action sequences, it takes you too long to focus and you miss pieces of it because it's so big and it's so close to you that it's not as clear. And so that is one of the things that can affect your viewing performance. on this. And this wasn't as big a deal in Oppenheimer because Oppenheimer is a much slower paced film and it's not dealing with lots of action. So it didn't make as big of a difference.
Yeah.
It was a much bigger deal in the Odyssey. So I do want to see it again from a different perspective. But at the moment, I would probably take Project Hail Mary slightly over the Odyssey, but that is subject to change.
And what's fascinating about that for both of us, we have that same initial thought is that this is a certified Christopher Nolan fan podcast. So
yeah. And that is not to the detriment of the Odyssey. It is partially to say how amazing Project Hail Mary actually was and the achievement that Project Hail Mary actually was.
I also think that if we were to be completely honest about it, Project Hail Mary probably for both of us exceeded our expectations, thought we're fairly high going into it. And this one may have met.
Yeah.
Our expectations.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And that's where I say Nolan is a victim of his own success because the bar is so high for him. As the best director in Hollywood, the bar is so high. But one of the things I will say for this is if we look at some of Christopher Nolan's other top movies, Inception, I knew instantaneously it was one of the best movies I've ever seen. Interstellar, I loved, but Interstellar grew in my appreciation and love for it over the 10 years plus since it's come out. So that is a movie that had a steady rise from I really like this, to this is one of the best movies I've ever seen, but that reaction was not instantaneous. So that being said, there is opportunity that time will pull on this from that standpoint.
Was it hard for you to disassociate past work by any of the actors in the movie from their role in the story? Because this is asking people who are big name actors like Matt Damon, Tom Holland, Dom Leguizamo.
Yeah,
this is asking a lot of them to inhabit these roles in a way that allows us to have that suspension.
Do you know, ironically, the character I most felt that with was Zendaya. I never saw Athena with Zendaya at all. Never. And that's partially how she was used and partially how she was portrayed and partially just her and the performance. It was harder to see her as Athena in that particular role.
There wasn't a lot given. There was a lot given to her to inhabit.
Sure.
It was really just not about this is Athena, but this is things Athena says.
That's a choice that was made.
Mm-hmm.
If you know you don't have a ton of meat in the role and there's a ton of things for that person to do, would it not be better to pick a character that instantly gives you that impression? So this is where I would say, and we can get into the specifics, where I do think casting was partially an issue with this film on a minor level.
I was disappointed that at no point Tom Holland looked at Buffy and said, I'm just your friendly in New York, so I'm going to get
it. All right. Do you want to get to the spoiler sections?
Okay.
All right, let's do it. So, spoilers now. This is your spoiler alert. If you don't want to hear any specifics about this film, skip ahead.
Don't go into the whirlpool.
Go to the end of this section. You can look in the notes and see where the end of the section is and come back to it after you've seen the film. All right, spoilers. Here we go. Pick some. Where do you want to start? When getting into the specifics of the movie, what stands out to you? Where do you want to start here?
So we have not discussed this before, so that means some
yeah
good way to approach it. I will start. that was only an inch long. For the sake of brevity, Jim, lots talking about. What are your two most favorite things about the movie?
Okay.
So, I mean,
yep.
Anything. Okay, play another one. Best performance in the movie for me is Ben Affleck. I would be like shocked if Ben Affleck was nominated for this year for this movie, and I will not inspire the chance. I thought every scene she was in, she dominated.
I would agree with that.
Out of what I talked about with like being able to separate the actor from the character.
Yeah.
Out of all the big name actors in this movie, I thought she was the one who most inhabited her character. I don't know if that's just down to writing, because they gave her more, like they gave her the opportunity to show emotion.
Yeah.
And we saw like rage, we saw despair, and saw frustration, all in this character in ways that weren't necessarily written with the other ones.
Yeah.
But again, like you said, that's kind of a choice of the person playing the role too.
Yeah.
So I think she took her role very seriously.
Yeah.
She was very much put out. Second thing for me was soundtrack. Morrison.
Yeah.
Is so he's getting to the point now for me where he is up there. And you look at some of his other work with Black Panther, some of his other soundtracks, and his ability to create a soundscape out of a wide variety of instruments that he feels. Like when someone can, you only have like one or maybe two original songs and we are everyone else's soundtrack or this composition.
Yeah.
The composition is wooden. But for the background, it's dangerous. Not much. And I'm at the point now where any movie I get to, I want them to do music. I'm like, oh, that's going to be good.
Okay. Yeah.
I can't wait to hear that. I can't wait to hear it after the movie. Like, I know it's a little good. I know we'll all listen to it when the movie's over. I'm not going to go be crazy and say, like, he's Hans Zimmer. but he is establishing a brand.
He's very good.
For himself. He is very good.
I have two things in this. I listened to the soundtrack today. And I will continue listening to the soundtrack. I think the one thing I would say is I feel like Hans Zimmer's soundtracks are in general a little bit more listenable outside of the movie themselves, and maybe a little bit more on the memorable side. I think when it comes to their work within the movie, I think they're very close. Like what Ludwig Göransson is doing is incredible and is really, really good. I have an interesting, I wonder, because by the time Christopher Nolan is up for his next movie, Hans Zimmer will be done with Dune. I'm just curious where they go forward after this. Is that done? Because Hans Zimmer was supposed to do Tenet, but had signed on to do Dune and decided he wanted to do Dune. And then he's been doing Dune ever since. Nolan's been using Ludwig Göransson since. So I'm curious as to who he goes to for his next movie.
Get the fly up.
Yeah. So, yeah. But no, Göransson, great. Great job. Great job on the soundtrack.
What are your two favorite?
So my favorite scene from the movie is the scene where his, like the ghost army comes out. I thought that was so cool. Like the way Nolan did that with kind of the hazy film, like in the semi-dark with the dark sand and the way the ghosts were decorated, and the, like there was some real like, oh, this is, yeah, I like this. That was, I thought from the visual standpoint, that was one of my favorite.
Interesting, interesting too, is in the trailer letter. For me, the trailer reveal looked like he was leading that group of people.
Yeah.
Somewhere when in the movie he was running away from.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. So I really enjoyed that scene from that standpoint of the visual spectacle of all of it.
It's crazy how much we think, sidebar, how much we think we know about a week from the trailer.
Yeah.
Even the longest trailer is
long. Yeah.
And the movie is 3 hours.
Yeah.
Like you're looking at an infinitesimal amount of a movie and trying to determine, like, is this going to be good or not?
Yeah.
Like, it's almost nothing. And in this movie, in particular with the trailers, there are at least two or three things that I can point out that were completely strange.
Yeah.
So,
I think the I'm trying to think of what my second favorite thing is. I think in the end, I liked his return to Ithaca. I think was my second favorite thing. That the way he interacts with Telemachus when he first comes back and rescues him in the temple, and then their initial rendezvous there. I like those scenes. I thought that was good. Because it was the rare, I think that was the only, if I remember correctly, that was the only time we really got Tom Holland interacting. That's the first time we got Tom Holland interacting with Matt Damon on that front. So I think I like that one. Of course, that's subject to change on that. But yeah.
I thought that sequence there really, when we established Matt Damon as the character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I will admit, like, from the end, we had some issues of being less not Matt Damon.
Yeah.
But I thought the writing, one of the strongest points for me of the writing, we thought was his character.
Yeah.
Because Christopher Nolan did a really good job of drawing out the idea of regret.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, is everything that we do that end up being
before? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what does it end up doing to our families, to our countries, to our future?
Yeah.
The movie did, my opinion was that the movie did a good job of handling those questions without making it so time locked or so over the top, like direct on point politically.
Yeah.
So, like, the opposite of what happened with Ryan Johnson.
Yeah.
Like, there were still those, I felt, to me, there were still some of those same kind of themes, but they were universal enough that you're going to be able to watch that. And
they were universal themes in that it wasn't obvious that you're going after one specific group of people.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas any group of people in any country can come up with things that might apply to, or individuals in their own lives could come up to and think about some of those type of things. I think, yeah, there was, and this is where, like, I want to see it again, because kind of the slow burn reveal of Odysseus's motivation for why he hasn't made it back. There's the surface level of he encountered all of these terrible obstacles that waylaid him. And then there's the deeper element of there's a part of him that never really wanted to return because he was still trying to deal with what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's layers of that. And at the beginning, the surface level is all the bad things that are happening to him through that. And as the movie progresses along, it becomes more about his personal reasons as to why he hasn't wanted to go back. And then at some point it shifts over to, like, when he's with Calypso on the island towards the end of, like, no, you need, like, here's why I don't want to go back. And then finally, like, to the point where he's admitting that to Penelope without revealing the fact that, you know, he's Odysseus directly. So I thought that was really interesting from that standpoint. Did it take too long to get there? Maybe, because I think a lot of the meat and a lot of the heart of the character of Odysseus is in that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is all wedged into the latter half of the movie.
Yeah.
So does that mean you go without the emotional elements as much in the first half of the movie? Somewhat.
Yeah. One thing I'd like to say, really, to some of the controversy about the building the castles.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think the controversy about the castles was stupid. After having seen the movie, he shot it out. This is why.
I can put them in two buckets. Yeah. Yes. So,
Ellen's character, like the Ellen Floyd character, yeah, does almost nothing.
Yes.
So, like, it's almost not relevant.
Yeah.
Like, I understand why some people get frustrated and say, like, it should be this archetypal kind of character, but it didn't do anything to ruin the world.
Yeah. So let's deal with that one, because I think they're in different categories along those. So when it comes to, and I should look up her name, because do you know her name offhand?
It's
Lupita Nyong'o. I don't want to try and get it wrong. Yeah. I think there's two elements to the controversy around her. And I think a lot of this obviously came out from people who had never seen the movie, because nobody had seen the movie.
Yeah.
So I think there's two things about it. One, when you see the movie, you realize it was overblown because that character means almost nothing to the film. So does it matter? No, it doesn't, because it plays almost no role in the film. On the other hand, I think what people are reacting to is a double standard, because it deeply matters that we get a specific character's ethnicity and cultural background correct sometimes.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's like, who cares? We'll make it whoever we want. And I think people react to the double standard. And this was an example of the double standard, including from that character herself, who was deeply concerned about getting the cultural things right for the fictional Wakanda.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter at all to get the cultural background when she's playing in the Greek. So I think what people are reacting to is what they perceive as a double standard. Now, was the reaction over the top for this particular role and this particular character? Absolutely. Because it didn't make a difference in this film. And it did not detract from this film whatsoever.
Yeah.
So
long story short, it is a fantasy, like it's not a real story.
Yeah.
So you have room to make artistic choices in that. And I don't, again, my personal opinion, you might disagree about Elliot's role in this, but my personal opinion is that Chris Nolan, from what I saw on the screen, I don't think he was making any political statements about casting.
I don't think Nolan is trying to make political statements with that choice. I do think it was an unnecessary choice, and it was an unfortunate choice because it's not believable. And I think the film is hurt because you put people in a position where they know what's going on and they have to either ignore it or they have to make a statement about it. It was entirely unnecessary. Mm-hmm. And that's where the thing. Does it hurt the film? Only in the sense of the believability. Now, mm-hmm. I would say the same thing when it comes to Zendaya and Athena,
mm-hmm.
because I don't think she was able to embody that role.
Yeah.
And so that hurts the film believability. And I think it's the same thing with Elliot Page on that standpoint of, I don't think it was necessary. I think it put negative light on the movie where it didn't need to be there. So he invited that with that choice.
That was my reaction. So that would be one that I don't think. If people now were stretching it, because a lot of people know Elliot's backstory, know about the whole thing. But if people come into this movie not knowing that, for me, this was probably the role that Elliot did the best at that people might not know, unless they knew. Like, I thought...
Sure.
I thought there probably wouldn't have been many people who could have done the role better, because that it was...
And there was
that, like...
There was...
And that character, like, stuff built into it.
There is some strategic element to it. Like, the first time you see that character... by themselves, So that doesn't draw attention to the obvious, you know, size differences on those things. So that type of thing. So I think he did as well as he could to make it as least distracting as possible. However, you just can't, similar to like, you just can't, like, if you know, you can't get away from like, and that's, and I think that's
the problem. The good news is for people who are really angry about this, the character died.
And again, a very minimal role that did not play a large part in the story. And so if you were going to, for me personally, if I'm not to tell anyone what they need to make a stand over or not stand over, I don't think this is rises to the level of don't go see this movie because of this.
Yeah.
I would not say, I do not think it rises to the level.
For one.
Many things. Yes.
People thought Star Wars is evil.
Yeah.
Because of the Force.
Yeah.
So earlier I said, and I just want your opinion because I didn't say it, but I don't think he's trying to make a political statement with these characters. Do you think there are people who will think, because of how the movie started, that he is making a statement by putting
front and center? I feel like it's less directed at, I think the controversy is less directed at Nolan and more directed at society in general. So I don't know that Nolan personally is going to take a lot of flack for it. I will just say one other obvious thing that I think is at play here. I think Christopher Nolan enjoyed being up on stage receiving a Best Director Oscar. And I think he enjoyed finally getting the acclaim he deserved as one of the directors. And we absolutely know that the Academy has very strict, awful, annoying, in my opinion, diversity standards for what movies are eligible to win Oscars. So if I attribute motive to Christopher Nolan on some of this, I attribute the motive as wanting to make sure he qualifies this film to win an Oscar. If I'm attributing motive, I'm not attributing political motive to Nolan. I'm attributing, I want to win an Oscar motive to Nolan, which then I put that blame more on the Academy and the ridiculous standards they have for art versus Nolan's thing. Now, if that's some of his motivation, that does bother me to some extent. But I think the controversial roles are very, very minor within the film. And I don't think warrant downgrading the film tremendously as a result of it.
Your initial spur of reactions. Oscar nominated, Oscar win. Oscar nominated for Best Picture.
Probably, yes.
Win.
No.
Same. Oscar nominated for Best Actor. I mean,
no.
I'm also going to say no, but not going to be surprised because of the scope and breadth of the character and how big this movie is going to be.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he gets one. Even that's just like,
I think it's,
we need to,
that I think they tend to, it's more based on my opinion of how the Academy views things.
Oscar nominated Best Actress on that one.
Yes.
I think so too.
My only category would be, do they consider her, I'm assuming they consider her the lead actress in this one, as opposed to a supporting actor.
In the same sense, though, she is the only, so my opinion, the only lead actor in this movie.
Yeah. That's the only thing. It was like a category thing. Is would they consider her a supporting actress?
I don't see any lead actress. Season one else, but it's spelled her best supporting.
Yeah.
Best supporting actor, Tom Holland get nominated.
No,
I don't think so either. I don't think he, personal opinion, I don't think he would be worthy of the nomination.
Yeah, I thought he was fine.
I think he did fine with what he had.
Yeah,
he didn't have a lot.
Yeah,
you think Chris Nolan is nominated for Best Director?
I do.
You think he wins?
No,
they went the same way.
And not to say that in either case is the best film or best director that we know who's going to win it, but given the Academy's history, it's very likely a films that nobody will have seen.
It will be fascinating. It will be absolutely fascinating when award season comes around to see what the buildup is behind these tier movies, because what ends up happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because to be honest, this is really fun because we're both usually like huge Christopher
Yeah.
backer supporters. To be honest, out of the two movies, The Odyssey is literally the Academy watching the awards over at Profit Film.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Absolutely. Because once you're in the club, you're in the club.
But I think Project Hail Mary, based on what we've seen so far, deserves to win Best Picture and Best Director.
And trying to predict what the Academy will do is always foolhardy.
Mm-hmm. The other thing for Project Hail Mary is it came out way at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
So like when we get to the end of the year, like what's that ramp up build up going to be like for me when the whole year and seeing it over the last year?
Shifting into slightly other gears because we do have to move on at some point. But two things for you on this one. One, it was interesting to me. 2024, I saw the movie The Return with Ralph Fiennes, which essentially is an entire movie that starts when Ralph Fiennes plays Odysseus, and it starts when he arrives back on Ithaca. And the entire movie is him back on Ithaca before. Like the movie starts with him washing up on shore in Ithaca, ends with him finally declaring he's Odysseus and taking up the mantle that was rightly deserved. So there's a sense in which I feel like I already saw some of this stuff because I just saw a movie about some of these things up filmed in similar locations. I'm like, I saw a scene on that hill. I saw a scene there, you know. So that was a really interesting experience to me, having seen two films in such a short period of time about a specific thing in a specific place. But secondly, is there anything else you had issue with in terms of the film?
I mentioned this briefly, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Just that I felt like I could have used more.
Mm. Like, more what? More what like would you
more, like more development?
Okay.
Because a lot of the stuff, especially if you don't have a ton of knowledge about Greek mythology and history and all this stuff, as the opportunity lost, just because, and the movie's 3 hours long, so it's hard to say where it went fast, when like, the parts of it went really fast.
Yeah.
Because you just don't have the time to flesh out, like, this means this means this. Like, when you're dealing with such a story exposition, then you're left on the ground.
Yeah.
So that's really the only thing I am saying with it. I felt like I could have had, like, easily could be in the miniseries instead of three-hour movie.
I think, and I will have to see this again to see if this is the case, I think they tried at the beginning, particularly in the scene with Penelope and Odysseus, kind of the flashback to before he left, when they're talking over, here's what's going to happen, here's, you know, like, all those type of things, like the last night together for those two. I think that was an attempt to establish likability for Odysseus and that you want him to return for everyone's sake. I do think those connections could have been stronger. Like the desire to root for him to return could have been stronger. Other side note, for a minor role, Hamish Patel, really good. He did a really good job as Odysseus is number two on that. Really liked his character. And I think he was really, really strong for the role he played in that one. I enjoyed him on that. Very quickly, where would you, on initial watch, where would you rank it in terms of Christopher Nolan movies?
I would probably, based on like the historical or based on previous literature kind of reading this done, I think I have it above Dunkirk with below Oppenheimer.
Okay.
But Oppenheimer, I have close to the very, very top. So there is something about like Interstellar and Inception, just so many groundbreaking film techniques, story, like, I have to have a little of that. The Brestons were my favorite movies. On that type of that.
Yeah.
So I would say it's at the bottom of the top five.
Mm-hmm.
maybe, and that may change.
Yeah.
After watching more. Mm-hmm. It's crazy now that we do it. The original top 10.
Yeah, I think I would probably have it. I would have it below Oppenheimer, above Dunkirk. Of his non-historical ones, I think the only one I would place it probably above, well, I would definitely place it above, oh, now I'm blanking out on the movie, Robin Williams, the one he directed but didn't write. Blanking out on that, with Al Pacino.
Insomnia.
Thank you. I'd have it above Insomnia. I might even have it below The Dark Knight, or above The Dark Knight Rises. But the rest of his non-historical ones, I'd probably have above that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It is. And we're talking about like amazing films.
Yeah.
All right. Wrap up with, we might revisit The Odyssey again. We'll see. But quick rundown of your watch list.
Well, it's been like 2 months since we recorded. The answer is a lot.
A lot, yes.
But I did see movies that were out there. I saw one by Dollar Billion Gold Watcher is funny. Like I said, I think it's better when a lot of people have said, if you like Moana, you'll like this movie. I still think the animated one is better. They were a couple of like added jokes to stop the new one or not. And the one. I also saw the Eagle Bad Bird movie. My impression of that is the craziest movie I've seen that involves just one person being blind dead. Like the amount of absolute insanity that goes to the people being taken out. Takes quite a mind to go off with. But
yeah,
some of the things, not necessarily a good mind, but it takes quite a mind.
Yeah.
So I also saw, we talked about Disclosure Day. I saw Disclosure Day. That's fine. But,
yeah.
I'm doing my number three movie or somewhere. If I drink the top third.
I thought it was fine. Like, I enjoyed it. I liked it. But that was, it was like, okay, that's fine.
And I also saw a movie where I pulled a character that was deserved to ship her most sort, The Death of Dolly.
Dang.
With Hugh Jackman.
Okay.
And this is by a statement to young Pat Greer, but I think he might have let Hugh Jackman's best
friend. Oh, interesting. Spicy take care at the end of the podcast.
He was playing like a past his prime. Robin Hood is trying to fight off all the downs of being let go.
Okay.
Coming back to avenge her family and feeling coming to grips with a lot like not being a character of Odyssey, but it was everything I've been justified.
Yeah.
We're trying to decide how to pass that on to people in the future.
Yeah.
So it was a very different take. Probably that it was H1 with 4. So
yeah.
It's nice. I enjoy it quite a bit. It's very much a slow drama.
Yeah.
That's a drama when sit on it.
I bought some movies on Amazon Prime Day.
Nice.
So I bought I had never gotten around to purchasing the newest Mission Impossible movie. So I purchased that. So then I had to go back and watch Dead Reckoning first and then watch Final Reckoning again. So I've been watching through those a little bit. I also bought F1. So got that. So that's what I've been watching when I've had the chance.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, everyone. That is the show. Thank you for tuning in to Film for Fans. Like, subscribe, tell your friends. Visit filmforfans.com. Like, subscribe, tell your friends. All that good stuff that I just said already.
Do it again.
Do it again. Now.
Like it twice.
Until next time, enjoy the movies.